You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition, where this week we talk about some of the great outfield catches, how to use your closer, and why the Mariners can't score any runs despite the fact that they're hitting a ton of home runs. With Aldin Gonzalez, who is with the ball club right now in Texas. You bring your cowboy boots, your cowboy hat, Aldin. You got a full week, Arlington and Houston. That's a lot of time in the Lone Star State.
You know what? And it's actually welcome, too. This is the third year that the Astros have been in the American League West. The Angels have made six separate trips to Texas each of the last 2 years. This is the first time the schedule makers thought it may be a good idea to put Arlington and Houston on the same trip. So it is all welcome on this side.
Yeah, that's luxurious for you guys. I'll tell you what, that's no small thing either, right? That shift of a couple of time zones that you have to do, the fewer times you have to do that during the season, I really feel the better, man. It makes a huge difference.
It's as if the Angels don't travel enough already as a West Coast team, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, none of it seems to be affecting Mike Trout. He continues to be Mike Trout. And you had a great piece the other day about game 500 in his career. And when I saw that number, I didn't exactly know how to react. I guess a little bit like Trout himself. Part of me said, already? And part of me said, that's not that many given everything that he's accomplished. Where do you come down on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at it both ways. I mean, look at all he's done. He's had an entire career's worth of accomplishments already. Three-time All-Star, three-time Silver Slugger, unanimous MVP, unanimous Rookie of the Year. His age, though, is what makes you think it came pretty quickly. He's 23 years old, having done all that. I thought, you know, looking back at the numbers, I thought, you know, maybe Mike Trout's one of the youngest ever to reach 500 career games at age. I think he was 23 years old in 249 days. Or something like that. But actually, he was like 70th on the list. I was kind of surprised by that. I guess it's just a bunch of guys who came up at 18, 19 years old and just, you know, got a lot of service time really quickly. But he continues to put himself in some really historic class. Since 1914, there are only five players who scored at least 375 runs and hit at least 95 home runs in their first 500 games. That's Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Chuck Klein, Albert Pujols, and Mike Trout. That's a pretty great company. And of those five guys, Mike Trout is the only one to steal over 100 bases at the same time. None of those other guys ever even came close to stealing 100 bags. I really thought he was going to go deep yesterday, though, because he's got 99 home runs. It would have been pretty cool to see 100 home runs in his 500th game. And he sort of tends to play to the moment like that sometimes, you know?
Yeah, no, he's got a little bit of that special touch, there's no question. And, you know, the other thing that's much harder to throw into the mix when you start talking about the numbers that guys accumulate and all those guys, you know, just superior ball players. But when you think of some of the defensive plays that Trout has turned in during this short span as well, it's just if there was some way to quantify that, you know, real accurately, I think it would separate him even more.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, I was about as shocked as anybody to see last year in terms of defensive run save and ultimate zone rating. You know, those things could be a little finicky and they could be a little tricky when you're only analyzing them in one-year sample sizes. I was pretty surprised to see Mike Trout's score come down because, you know, even when he's not getting consistently great jumps on balls, he's able to make up for it so much just because of his acceleration, his overall speed, his vertical leap. I mean, we saw him on opening day already. He robbed his first home run going over the wall in Safeco Field. He's just got, I think, the big separator with Trout. And the one thing that people always talk about is, you know, yeah, he's a great hitter. He's got great strike zone discipline, and he has amazing power. But the separator for him is people can't believe how fast he is. For as big a guy as he is, I mean, a guy who's built, I mean, he's pretty much built like an NFL running back. To be as fast as he is, I think that's what kind of separates him a little bit.
Yeah. So talking about his build, what was your Donnie Ventura thinking the other day? I guess it was in Sunday's game against the Royals when I still can't get my mind around the sequence. He threw up and in on him, and then Trout lined one back up the box off him, and Ventura was staring him down, and then they went chest to chest behind home plate after Trout scored. What has anybody figured out what was going on with Ventura?
Yeah, I don't think anything really was going on there. I talked to Trout about it. I wasn't at the game Sunday, but I talked to him about it on Monday. He still had no idea what was going on. All he knows is that he hit a single up the middle. He got to first base, and Ventura was barking a little bit. And you know what? The thing is, Yordano Ventura is one of those guys who, and I covered him a little bit during the playoffs last year, he's one of those guys who takes the mound with a chip on his shoulder, who's really competitive, who's not afraid of anybody. He's kind of like a little bit like Pedro Martinez in that sense. He's just got that kind of bulldog mentality, and he kind of switches to another gear when he's on the mound, and that's what makes him go. That's what makes him as good as he is that little edge that he has. And sometimes when you have an edge like that on the mound, it kind of manifests itself in different ways. Sometimes it kind of leaks out of you in somewhat inappropriate manners, and then you have situations like this. I don't think that he even knew what he was thinking at that time. Some guys are just so competitive, and they get into this kind of mode, and then when it eats out of them, we're confused. But that's just kind of how these guys are wired. I mean, we used to see it with Roger Clemens, too. Remember when he threw that piece of bat at Mike Piazza during the World Series one time? Some of these guys are just relentless competitors, and sometimes they don't even know what they're doing out there sometimes. Maybe he thinks Mike Trout tried to hit a line drive up the middle on purpose or something. Who knows what he was thinking at that moment?
Yeah. You know what, though? Alden, I love the answer because I think that kind of is the answer. So often we try to really get down to the bottom of it, and I think when that adrenaline's pumping the way it does, some of these guys, you just, you know, all bets are off. You don't really know. It was a funny situation, though. And a not-so-funny situation, and one I feel like, you know, one has to address, but I'm wondering what the Angels are looking forward to this week. You know, you spend a full week in the state of Texas. The Josh Hamilton situation just kind of hangs out there. And last check, I think he was in Houston with a buddy. Are there plans to communicate, get together? What's going on?
Yeah, it's. I think the one word I would use to describe the situation is it's awkward. It's very awkward. Josh Hamilton is still in Houston. He has remained in Houston since pretty much early February, almost uninterruptedly rehabbing February 4th surgery to repair his right AC joint. I'm told that there are no plans for Josh Hamilton to come by Minute Maid Park to actually be with the team, meet with the team, or anything like that. I'm pretty sure some of the players will go out of their way to go see him. Mike Socha told us yesterday that he wants to meet with him face-to-face. But it's very clear through everything that has gone on this season that the Angels just don't want him around, that upper management doesn't want him around. They didn't give him a locker room in spring training. They didn't give him his own locker at Angel Stadium. They've pretty much taken out all the merchandise from Angel Stadium. And, you know, the players are somewhat confused because, you know, here's a guy who's rehabbing an injury. Why can't we see him? Why can't he be around the team? You know, these guys are asking the natural questions that you would have. But right now, this is an issue that's much bigger than them. This is an issue with ownership and Josh Hamilton's agent. And what I continue to be told is that, you know, there's a growing sense that Josh Hamilton will not play for the Angels this year. And the big question is going to be whether they can negotiate a buyout, how much money they can save on the remaining $83 million that's left on his contract through the 2017 season, whether a trade could be worked out. The logistical matters of that are going to be really complicated. It may be a really drawn-out process just because of the size of his contract. But it's been very evident from the statements that the Angels have made since the announcement and from the comments that Artie Moreno had with the media the other day that, you know, a lot of people may disagree with the sentiment here, but the Angels kind of feel a little bit betrayed. They feel very disappointed that he had the relapse. Obviously, you know, Josh Hamilton's a recovering addict. These things are very difficult. But this is a situation right now that's bigger than the players. It's bigger than Mike Socha. I think the Angels have just pretty much made it clear they really just don't want him around right now. So I think they're just going to be in this awkward stage of limbo until something gets figured out, and I have no idea when something will be figured out.
Yeah, well, yeah, such a shame, and I'm sure you do get even tired of talking about it and dealing with it, but appreciate your thoughts on that, and your thoughts on all things Angels, as always. Aldi Gonzalez, thanks so much. We're talking with Jane Lee today, and Jane, it's the feast or famine Oakland A's at 4-4 to start the year. Boy, their four wins, they've outscored their opponents 38-1, and their four losses, it's been a little bit closer, 26-13 they've been outscored in those four losses. I guess what stands out there is that when they have won here early on, the offense has been monstrous.
It really has. I mean, like you said, even in those in their losses, they've been close losses. You know, they've gone to extra innings twice and lost. And I think, you know, despite their record, you know, Bob Melvin was talking about this last night, you look at their record and it's a little deceiving because their offense has been fantastic. And I think that's really encouraging, you know, especially for fans that thought or were worried about this offense and about their ability to score runs. I don't think anyone was ever concerned about their pitching. The A's are always going to have good pitching. They obviously have a ton of depth there this year. But the biggest questions, you know, kind of remained in their lineup. Could all these new pieces fit together, and could they, you know, get together and score runs? And, I mean, the answer early on, granted it's a very small sample size still, but it's an astounding yes. And I think it's important for these guys to do this early on because, you know, they really didn't know how things were going to come together. And the fact that they're learning, okay, you know, we can do this 1-9. It's not just one or two guys that are, you know, getting the job done. I mean, any given night, it's been, you know, someone at the top or bottom or middle of the lineup, you know, hitting a home run or driving in runs. And this isn't a team that can rely on the long ball. The A's did hit a lot of home runs in recent years, and so that's why you saw so many late inning or extra inning wins. They could just kind of sit back and wait for those home runs. This team can't, and although they can hit home runs, we saw three last night, you know, they can also drive in runs other ways. You're seeing a lot of extra base hits, a lot of doubles, some triples even. So it's a very productive lineup, and I think, you know, despite the fact that they're sitting at .500, granted, just after 8 games, they're really encouraged by this.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that about the extra base hits because the home runs haven't exactly piled up. But I was just running through some of the numbers this afternoon, and I mean, they've got like 30% more doubles than anybody in the American League. You know, they've got four triples, and it's pretty obvious that they have put together an offense that will, you know, find a way to hurt opposing teams in any number of ways offensively.
Yeah, and they're hitting over .300 as a team, which, I mean, in recent years, they didn't even come close to that. And I'm sure, you know, that number won't stay there all year. But, I mean, it's a really good sign early. And, you know, the A's always target guys that get on base, you know, draw their walks. And I think it's also a group that just makes pitchers work. I mean, the A's, you know, on any given night, we saw last night against Scott Feldman. I mean, that's a really good pitcher out there. And usually, you know, they have had their troubles with him and with some of these other guys. And even against Felix last week, you know, they drive up their pitch counts and make him work. And we've seen a lot of long innings, you know, a lot of innings where 9, 10, 11 guys are going up to the plate. And I think in 6 of their 8 games, they've already, you know, compiled double digits in hits, which is pretty remarkable what they're doing.
Yeah, those are some pretty big numbers. One thing they're not doing is stealing any bases. They haven't even attempted that, and I suppose that's not a huge surprise again, especially when they're circling the bases on doubles and extra base hits. But we talked at the winter meetings about it was early on as Billy Beane was making a number of moves, and everybody was kind of scratching their heads saying, what's Billy doing this time? You know, trading Samardzija and Derek Norris, and Brandon Moss. And there was great confusion as to what the direction was going to be. As the rest of the offseason played out, and now you see yesterday the three new kids, you know, Butler and Lowry and Simeon, they're all hitting home runs. Everybody in Oakland happy with what they got?
I would think so. I hope so. I remember talking to you and even me being very confused and surprised at some of the things that were going on. I think the day I talked to you was the day they traded Brandon Moss. And, that's when Josh Donaldson had already gone. And then, of course, Jeff Samardzija was out the door soon. So at the time, no, none of this made sense at all. And you're wondering, what are they doing? But then as the offseason went along and, you know, you see them pick up a guy like Ben Zobrist, that's when, you know, your thought changes to, okay, well, they're definitely not backing out of this year. You know, you get a guy like Zobrist as valuable as he is. And then they rounded out their offseason with Tyler Clifford, you know, bolstering their bullpen. And you take a look at their lineup and the pieces they got back and how it all came together. And really the biggest thing was they wanted to collect pitching and not just quantity, but quality. I mean, you see the way they filled out their rotation. Jesse Chavez isn't even in their rotation. He was one of their best starters in the first half of last year, and even he didn't make the rotation because they have all these young guys, Jesse Hahn and Kendall Graveman, that they got for a reason. You know, they didn't get them and trade away, you know, Josh Donaldson, Derek Norris, just to stash them at AAA. You're now seeing how this whole plan unfolded and how maybe it didn't make sense in the beginning. But, I mean, the A's, let's be honest, they knew what they were doing, and they typically do.
Yeah, they've shown that ability. You know, all the young guys in that rotation, and then the one old guy, I don't know if he's old really, 31 years old, but Scott Kazmir, and he is just one of those neat stories, off playing independent league ball and now back in the big leagues for the last 3 years, including this year. And right now, you know, off to just a fantastic start. What are your thoughts on Kazmir? Do people still look at him and see that guy who went down to independent league baseball and has made it back up, or is that no longer the side story with him?
No, I think it's kind of forgotten at this point. And, you know, it's a testament to what Kazmir has done since that time. But I think it's also important for everyone to remember that story just because, of how remarkable it is what he did, you know, going home, taking a break from baseball, then, you know, working in Houston, trying to, you know, reinvent himself, find himself again, and then playing an independent ball, coming back. And, I mean, you look at him now, though, you would have no idea that this guy ever left the game. His velocity is already better than it was last year. And, I mean, he was pretty good for the A's last year, making the All-Star team. But, I mean, ever since spring began, he's said all along, you know, he feels better than he can, you know, ever remember. I mean, his velocity is consistently at 94. Even last night, he was a little run down by the humidity and still gave up just three hits over six innings. And when he's, you know, when he's not feeling great, he still has the stuff to kind of keep guys off balance. So, you know, and maybe there was concern at the offset of last season and even this season just about his health, because he is a guy with, you know, a lot of maybe an injury-prone past. But, I mean, he feels great. And, you know, watching him, I mean, he's as stable as anyone in the rotation right now.
Yeah, pretty impressive, and still a pretty impressive story. The team just got Josh Reddick back. He's been back for a couple of games now. And Jared Parker is looming. How close are they to getting Parker back and at the level where they think he can really, you know, jump back in and be as big a contributor as he used to be?
Yeah, he's actually, I mean, his next time out might be in a minor league game, which would maybe seem ahead of schedule. I mean, he's kind of always targeted a June return. He's saying June 1st, the earliest he can be back. But, I mean, now I wouldn't put end of May out of the question just because of how quickly and steadily he's moved along in this process. Now, they're not going to rush him back by any means, and they don't have to. They have plenty of depth in the rotation to kind of withstand his absence. But, I mean, he's he's really moved along well in this rehab process. And he's kind of ditched the cutter and just sticking with three pitches right now. And his velocity's already up. And I mean, watching him, you know, every time out, Bob Melvin and others have said, you know, you wouldn't know that he's not pitching a real game. I mean, he just looks that good. And you had to wonder about him just because this wasn't just Tommy John surgery. This was his second Tommy John surgery. And, you know, he's still so young. But I think the fact that he is young kind of aids him in that, you know, his body is able to rebound a little bit better. So I would say, I would still say June, probably targeted for him. And I mean, that's only a month and a half away. And, you know, you see the guys they have in their rotation right now. It's not like they really, really need him. But, you know, when he is available to return, it's going to be like making a big trade and giving up nothing. So, you know, again, the depth on this team is really, it's really remarkable. And it's not an accident. I mean, they built this roster as it is, on purpose with so much depth and versatility. And, you know, you have a guy like Parker waiting in the wings and even A.J. Griffin after that. I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah, it's just pretty amazing when you start rattling it all off. Well, Jane, enjoy your long road trip, 10 days on the road, and we'll talk to you soon. We're just chatting with Greg Johns, talking Mariners baseball. And, well, I'll tell you what, there was a day where Safeco was expansive yard. Nobody could hit it out of there. They moved the fences in a little bit in left field. Now Nelly Cruz, all he does is hit home runs. Dustin Ackley, they can't keep him in the yard anywhere. Doesn't matter, home, road. Go down to Dodger Stadium where, you know, the ball doesn't carry. What's going on with these slugging Mariners?
Well, Nelson Cruz has a lot to do with it. Here on this road trip, 2 for 18, starting out his career with the Mariners, midway through his fifth game, 2 for 18, hadn't had an RBI, and he hits a three-run jack in Oakland. And then in his next eight at-bats, he ends up with four home runs, seven RBIs. So Nelson really, really woke up here in a little stretch on the road, and when the big man's hitting, that certainly makes that offense look like what they were hoping for. Need some other guys to come along with them. As you mentioned, Ackley's off to a good start as well. Need some of the other guys to get on base. They really haven't really clicked offensively yet with hitting under 200 for their first seven games. Not really where they want to be there, but the long ball, as you mentioned, has been the story. And it's 25 runs. The first 25 runs, 17 came from home runs. So, you know, that part is there. Certainly a little more pop than we've seen in the past. I'd like to see the rest of that offense come along with it.
Yeah, well, Sparky Anderson would be so proud, would love the way this team looks. just up there hacking. To your point, though, they've got to get on. I've always been curious about Mike Zunino and what they expect from him offensively, you know, not just now, but I think in his career. Because first-round pick, when they chose him, he looked like a guy who really might kind of be the well-rounded catcher. But I'm just wondering about his offense.
You know, he had a great spring and really was one of the big stories in camp as well as he was hitting. Kind of had worked a lot on his two-strike approach, was doing a lot of things in spring, and they felt real, real good about it. He's got into the regular season, as often happens when the lights come on, things get a little different. Pitchers pitching them a little tougher. He's had a tough first week out of the box at the plate. Behind the plate, you know, he's everything they want. I mean, he's blocking pitches. They got a tough staff to catch, and he's excellent at blocking and working with these pitchers and everything they want behind the plate. They would love to see him come along offensively, and it's in there. We saw it this spring. We've seen flashes of it. He's another guy with power. They need him to really get on base more, you know, a little better approach up the middle and to right field, and that's what he was working on this spring, you know, just getting on base, getting better at bats. And he's struggled out of the gate, but, you know, hey, so is Robinson Cano. So, you know, you don't put too much weight on a first week. Certainly Zunino probably needs to relax a little and get back to what he was doing this spring. There's a lot in there. It's a young kid that really, I think, part of the foundation of this franchise. And I fully expect him to be a much better offensive catcher than we've seen. And certainly if he continues behind the plate and hit a little bit, he's probably an all-star caliber catcher down the road if he brings that part of his game along.
Well, and you know, right now, as you point out, some of the guys covering up some of the deficiencies of Robinson Cano or Zunino, and we talk about Cruz and Ackley, but even with some of the good offense or some of the home runs we've seen, a lot of extra inning games, I tell you, and that can be tough on a bullpen. And Will Helmsen to the DL. What's his status? Kind of a weird injury, I guess, there. And then how much depth do they have to bring along?
Yeah, they're fortunate because one of their big strengths is depth and in that bullpen. And they've needed it right away. As you mentioned, Will Helmsen, kind of a fluky thing. He was stretching, kind of doing some twisting exercises, and Danny Farquhar ran past him and caught his arm and just hyperextended his elbow, and it gimped up on him a little bit and tightened up, and they put him on the DL. Part of the reason they put him on the DL was they don't expect to probably be out the full 2 weeks, 15 days, but the bullpen got so beat up right off the bat, three extra inning games in a row. Starters didn't go quite as long as they'd hoped on a couple of occasions, really using that bullpen early. Needed to get some fresh arms. Brought Dominic Leon back up to take Will Helmsen's place, so they just have some arms to get through the series. And they expect Will Helmsen to be throwing again in about a week, sometime later this week, and expect him to be okay. So that should be a short thing. But their bullpen is, it's one of the backbones of this team. Pitching definitely where they're built on, and it hasn't been great right out of the chute. Rodney had a real rough outing. They haven't had. The starters have struggled a little bit, but I expect that group will come around. I mean, they were off good last year, and it's largely the same group. They had a Jay Happ who had an outstanding first start. So the pieces are there. Certainly, you like what you should expect there, and you get that offense. It's coming around a little bit. That's what this team's built on. I expect they'll be fine as they get playing here.
How vocal do folks get about McClendon's use of the bullpen? I, for one, I just loved what he did in Oakland the other day with Rodney. And obviously, that did not work out well. But, bringing a guy in with a four-run lead like that, your closer, because of the way the save stat has perversed the way we use the bullpen, that is so uncommon. But I love to see that kind of play. I don't know where you come down on that, but how are folks dealing with that move?
Well, if Fernando had pitched well, that game would have been a lot less of an issue. He came in with a four-run lead and gave up four, and that's not what you want to see out of anybody. Rodney hadn't given up more than two runs all of last year in any appearance, so that's not what you expect from Rodney. He was outstanding last year, and there's no reason to think he won't be. It's a tough debate. Sometimes closers, they don't have that adrenaline when they come in a non-save situation. I don't think that was the issue. I just think he was having trouble throwing strikes and controlling things. I don't think it was about adrenaline. He gets pretty pumped up when he comes in. McClendon's point is four-run lead. You come in, if you don't bring your closer in, you bring somebody else, they give up a base run or two, then you got to go to your closer. Now you burned up two guys. So that's McClendon's thought on it. The flip side of it, they ended up burning up two guys anyway because Rodney gave up the lead, but you just don't expect to do that. I don't think you can make your decisions based on a case scenario all the time. So Lloyd's pretty clear. He said four-run lead, I'm gonna go to Rodney every time, and that's just the way he views it. So first I didn't have a lot of four-run leads to protect last year, so I guess the encouraging news is they put up some runs, and I think they'll take that situation over the course of time.
Did Rodney have an opinion or voice an opinion about that move after the game, or did he seem to be cool with it?
Yeah, he was fine. I mean, his thing was mostly he just didn't pitch well, and he felt bad about it. But he was glad they won the game. Pretty simple. He didn't overthink it. All these guys say, "You want me to pitch? I'll pitch. You want me to hit? I'll hit. Tell me when." He wasn't concerned about this situation at all. He's more concerned about how he threw.
Early interleague play for the Mariners in Los Angeles to play the Dodgers. There's something that just hasn't really happened very much over the years, but I don't know. Does it seem weird to you yet, or have we just gotten so accustomed to interleague play any time of year that it's just water off the duck's back?
To me, it's a little unusual to play this early. We're just kind of used to having it packed in the middle. I don't mind it. I enjoy going to different parks and seeing different places, and I think players do too. I think it's guys are getting used to it, but it's still a little unusual to roll into a different stadium than literally the first week of the season and kind of, you know, get used to things. But when he hit four home runs, they didn't win last night, first game out here in the interleague play, but they certainly enjoyed seeing the way the ball was flying out, and I think they're interested to see how it goes the rest of the series. But interleague play, I think guys are still intrigued to play different teams, different things, and it's just part of the game now. But I enjoy it, and I definitely enjoy being at Dodger Stadium.
I was going to say, if you got to get stuck going somewhere, Dodger Stadium, hanging out with Vin Scully, and just being down there in Chavez Ravine, not a bad thing. Well, no. Greg, listen, thanks for the update, and we'll do it again next week. Pleased as always to be joined by Brian McTaggart. Talk a little Astros baseball, and Brian, this is the year, right? This is the year that the franchise and the city has been looking toward for a while. I know ownership has gone out, spent a little bit more money, and for the first time in a number of years, I think there's a sense in Houston maybe that this is the year they could be a little more competitive.
Yeah, I think no doubt. I mean, from the start of spring training, there's been a sense of optimism. It's kind of like a black cloud has been lifted a little bit. They feel they have a legitimate bullpen. In fact, probably one of the best bullpens now that they've made the additions they made. They feel they have a pretty good lineup, a deep lineup, certainly the best lineup they've had in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's with a new manager and a new outlook and a bunch of new players, they did spend some money. This is the year where I think they took a big step forward last year, winning 19 games. Of course, they had nowhere to go but up, but I think this is the year to where they could get to 500, maybe even post a winning record. And a weekend, they're right on that pace. It's a year to move forward.
All right. Well, to a couple of the points you made, let's start with the bullpen. And they really did go out and make some big changes to that bullpen. And by and large, it's been very good. You know, maybe throw out maybe a pitch by Joe Thatcher, but largely they've been very good, but maybe a little overworked here early. How concerned are they with that?
Yeah, they have been very good, and in the, you mentioned the Thatcher in the eighth inning on Sunday in Arlington, that they gave up a couple of runs to allow the game to be tied, and then the bullpen comes back in that same game and throws six scoreless innings in the last six innings of that game, and they're able to pull that game out. The unfortunate thing is every member of the bullpen pitched in that game. That left them shorthanded going into Monday, and after Scott Feldman could only go five innings, they had to use Asher Wojciechowski in relief for four innings, and Asher was going to pitch on Tuesday, and so they had to call up Brad Peacock to start. But overall, with Gregerson, he's gotten a couple of save opportunities, nailed them down, no problem, using Chad Qualls in different roles now. Tony Sipp has been pretty good. Of course, George Springer saved him four earned runs on Sunday by taking back what would have been a walk-off grand slam. And Pat Neshek had a little bit of a hiccup on Sunday, but with those four guys, and they're close to getting Josh Fields back, I think at the end of the day we're going to look at this is going to be one of the better bullpens in the American League, and that's going to make a huge difference in their win-loss record just based on the number of saves they've blown in the last 3 years, which is the most in the majors.
Yeah, well, no doubt a huge, huge difference for the team. I guess there has to be, though, a little bit concerned about the depth of the rotation, because if that can't – if you can't get innings out of those starters and – really, no matter how good a bullpen you have, there's a limit as to how much pressure you can put on them.
Yeah, there is. And if you look last year, there was a trend that really developed all year long. Is when Keuchel and McHugh started, I don't have the winning percentage in front of me, but it was really good. Astros won more often than not, probably like 66% of those games. And when Keuchel and McHugh didn't start, they struggled. Here we are, seven games into the season. They've won three games. Well, two games started by Keuchel and one by McHugh. So one of these other guys in the rotation is going to have to step up. You know, I think Feldman, I think he's going to be okay. I know he's kind of an easy target for fans because of the money he makes, but Dallas Keuchel had 21 quality starts last year. Feldman had 20. I know quality start, six innings, three runs. Maybe Keuchel's quality starts were better quality than Feldman, but they just need him to go out and pitch every fifth day, get 200 innings. I think he'll be okay. But, yeah, it gets a little thin after that, I think. Wojciechowski's out now. Peacock's coming in. Overholzer, is he going to be in when his blister's ready? So they do have some question marks at the bottom of the rotation. Roberto Hernandez is going to go out there and do what he did last time, probably throw six innings, give up three, four runs. It just depends on how well they they catch the ball and whether they can hit. So not a deep rotation, pretty good at the top. And I think all along that's going to be the key, is what they get out of the bottom of the rotation so far. They need somebody else other than Keiko McHugh to step up and really establish himself as someone they can count on every fifth day.
Yeah, what about their depth going, you know, just a little bit further into, you know, to AAA? Will they have the bodies to throw at this as the season progresses?
Well, they're already going to have their sixth starter with Peacock. And Peacock's going to be interesting because, you know, he struggled with control last year. He throws hard and has good stuff at times, but he had hip surgery in the offseason, and he came to camp and was 30 pounds thinner and looked like a different guy. Really looked good in the spring because he was building up his arm strength. So I'm willing to give Peacock a blank slate and see what he can do. And maybe he is the guy. But beyond Peacock, I think you have to almost look, you look at guys like J.D. Buchanan and so forth, but I think the guy everyone looks at is a AA, and that's Mark Appel. And he's only got one start under his belt so far, did pretty well. And if he comes up, it's not going to be till later in the season. So it's going to be up to the Wojciechowskis and the Peacocks and the Buchanans if he gets called up in the time being.
Okay. All right. Well, everybody's a better pitcher, no doubt, when George Springer is roaming the outfield behind them and making plays like he made last weekend at Arlington. Just an incredibly, you know, it's one thing to make a great play. Guys do it, you know, with some regularity in the big leagues. But to do it in those moments, right, those clutch moments like he did, I mean, those are just jaw-dropping moments, and I'm sure, you know, terrifically proud moments for the franchise.
Yeah, you can't get more clutch than that. I mean, extra innings, bases loaded, and a guy looks like he's hitting a walk-off grand slam, and Springer goes over the wall and brings it back. And looking at the replays from all different angles, I mean, I think it certainly would have been over the wall. And, you know, and they can say whether he, you know, doesn't catch it, you know, they still win the game. The Rangers still win the game regardless. It's going to be a walk-off. But tell that to Tony Sipp, because Tony Sipp said he saved me four earned runs, and he probably saved my season. And, you know, if you're a reliever, especially a left-handed guy like Sipp who might not pitch that many innings, those four earned runs are going to look pretty big at the end of the year. But their outfield defense as a whole has been really, really good. You have three center fielders on the outfield. So you have Springer, who came up as a center fielder in right field, Jake Marisnik in center field, who is probably one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. You just don't hear a lot about him because he's so young. And then Colby Rasmus, who's been center fielder his whole career and last couple of years, has played on that hard turf in Toronto, is now in left field, and he's covering a lot of ground out there. So I think their outfield defense is going to take away a lot of base hits. I think we're going to see catches like this from Springer. We're going to see some nice catches from Marisnik. He really looked good in spring, covering a lot of ground. I think Rasmus will be okay in left field. So if the pitchers can keep the ball in the ballpark, I think these guys are going to run it down and get them.
All right. Well, by the way, get out of the bunker. I don't know what kind of cell coverage you've got there, B-Tag. Come on, man. this doesn't require a whole lot, but was that catch as good as or better than the one that Gary Matthews Jr. made, stealing a home run from Mike Lamb there many years ago?
Yeah, in fact, I brought that up on Sunday. I went back and looked at that catch in Arlington. That was in 2006, and I think Lamb was going for his second home run of the game or the cycle or something like that. But to me, I think the Gary Matthews catch, where he went so high over the wall and kind of spun himself around, I think that's probably the best catch I've ever seen in the outfield. Now, Springer's catch, I think, came at a bigger moment because it saved the game and saved four runs. But to me, the Gary Matthews catch in 06 is the standard bearer. When I see a guy make a catch at the wall, I go back and look at the Gary Matthews catch and say, is it better than this? And so far, I've always said no, including the Springer catch.
Yeah, yeah. We're running out of time, but what's the key to this offense? I know much has been made about the struggles early on. Who is the key, if you will, and who do you figure pulls this team out of it here in the next week or so?
Well, they're going to have to get the heart of that batting order going coming around, and that it's going to be up to George Springer, even though he's been hitting second for much of the year. He's scuffling a little bit, but Chris Carter, Evan Gattis, right in the middle of that order, 4-5, they're going to have to start picking up the slack. Both have gotten off to terrible starts. Gattis was 0 for 23 before he got his first hit. Carter, seven games in, still has only one hit. And we know when Carter gets hot, he can really carry the club. But you know, they can't afford for Chris Carter to have 2 months to where he struggles to get on base and then have 2 months to where he, you know, he hits 20 home runs. I mean, they need him to be consistent, and right now he's not off to a good start at the plate. So they need to get those two guys going in the middle of the lineup. You know, I think at the top of the lineup with Altuve and Springer, they're going to be okay. I think having Castro and Lowry, wherever you want to put them, they're going to be fine. Marisnik has done a really nice job in the nine hole. It's up to those two guys, Gattis and Carter. Not even hitting home runs. Just get on base, hit the ball a little bit, and get going. Because it's really been tough sledding the first week for those two guys. But Carter's very streaky. We know he can get hot. I think Gattis, now that he's got that first hit out of the way, that maybe we'll see him start to heat up as well.
Amazing. We'll see those two 2-46 at this point of the season. Just not going to get it done. But the man who always gets it done, Brian McTaggart. Thanks so much, man. Great to talk to you. T.R. Sullivan will break down the Rangers' first week of the 2015 season, T.R. And I think coming in, there were plenty of questions or issues out there on the table, whether it was could this team stay healthier than last year, would the offense respond better this year, those types of things. The reality is it was not a great first week for this team, but they come out of it, 3-4, Is that a silver lining on this thing for them?
Well, you know, when you go into Oakland and you split four games, that's not bad. You know, losing 2 out of 3 to Houston isn't too good, especially at home. You hate to lose your home opener. You know, I think we're all still trying to figure out what this team is going to be, where they're going with their pitching, how good this offense is going to be. I think there's still a lot of questions, and they keep coming up because of the injuries. You know, they've lost Ryan Rua in left field for a couple months because of the broken foot. You know, they lost Derek Holland, devastating injury for, you know, at least 2 or 3 months because of his shoulder. So it's just still not clear, you know, how good this team can be and can they contend.
You know, one wants to choose their words carefully because there's nothing funny about it, but it is almost laughable how much bad luck the Rangers, or what appears to be bad luck, they've run into going back to last year. And that story well told, but the Yu Darvish situation at the beginning of spring training, you throw Martin Perez in there, Matt Harrison, Profar, you know, now that with Holland and Ryan Rua, and we've even seen Chinsu Chu miss some time already this year with back spasms. I thought the story that, or the piece of news that really kind of maybe even hurt the most was the news about Luis Alberto Bonilla.
Well, you know, they were hoping to have a lot more pitching depth this year. And Luis Alberto Bonilla was going to be part of their depth. Kid they got from Philadelphia, pitched pretty well at the end of last season. You know, it's certainly a blow to their depth. You know, they've still got some guys down at AAA who can help them. But, you know, every pitcher they lose is not good.
Yeah, well, to be certain. Colby Lewis, meanwhile, he was good his first time out. Maybe, you know, they're not all going to be great outings for him, but he's been a great story, not just, you know, this year, but his career is a fun one, I think, the trajectory it's taken and just his ability to get out there and work all the time.
Yeah, it's been an incredible story. You know, this guy was a first-round pick, had a chance to be in the majors in 2003, struggled, shoulder, he's had numerous injuries, you know, finally got his career back on track in Japan, came over to the United States, was a big part of 2 World Series teams, and then he had, you know, the hip surgery, and he had the flexor tendon surgery. Everybody thought he might be done. Now he's back in the rotation, huge part of this team. The guy just keeps on working at it, keeps on fighting, keeps on battling, and right now he's an integral part of this rotation.
How have they felt about Yovani Gallardo's first couple of outings?
Well, he's not the overpowering pitcher he was early in his career with Milwaukee, Dave. He's more of a little bit more of a finesse pitcher, ground ball pitcher, trying to get the ground ball, using the sinker more. He's worked on a changeup. He's going to be an interesting guy to watch. He's a free agent after this season. I don't think the Rangers are going to do anything to re-sign him during the season. I think they'll let it play out. You know, he's got to show he can be able to pitch without being overpowering. He's got to be able to get the ground balls. He's got to keep his pitch count down. He's got to be able to get the strikeout when he needs it, and he's got to keep his walk totals down. And, you know, he can do it. I mean, this guy's been a very good pitcher for 5 or 6 years for the Brewers. Still a lot of talent there. Rangers are counting on him pretty heavily.
I was a little surprised to see the strikeout numbers as high as they have been for the first two starts. He's got 12 strikeouts and almost 10 innings of work. Because to your point, I think what people saw last year, this year in spring training and everything was that he was going to try and pitch to contact, get more outs, ground balls, and that sort of style versus strikeouts. But they've still been there for him.
Well, he still has, you know, good off-speed stuff. He can get the strikeout when he wants, and he can go upstairs with the fastball if he needs to be and get away with that. And he's had a couple of strikeouts. He still has a lot of weapons. He's just not as overpowering as he once was.
Let me ask you about the bullpen, TR, because during spring training, there was, it seems like there was weekly hope that maybe a left-hander would come along and provide them that luxury in the bullpen. It did not happen. Jeff Banister felt like, I don't know that he wanted to, but that he could start the year without a lefty in the pen, just find a right-hander and get lefties out. That, you know, it's a week or a week into the season. I no one wants to push a panic button yet, but that does not appear to be, you know, working out perhaps as well as they would have liked. Is there any concern there internally? There more conversation about trying to maybe go outside to find a left-hander?
Well, I think it's a concern for them. They got some, you know, they got power arms in the bullpen. Keone Kella, Ramon Mendez, and Natale Feliz, and they really like Sean Tolleson, who's done a terrific job against left-handers. I mean, they got some good weapons on the right side. The biggest problem with the bullpen, besides not having the left-handers, they got a lot of inexperience. I mean, Kella's in his first season, Mendez first full season, Phil Klein first full season. Sean Tolleson's had a couple years in the big leagues, but, you know, he's their most experienced reliever. They got a lot of youth in that bullpen, and I think that's a big concern is how these guys will hold up, you know, over the long term in different situations, you know, Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, you know, division games. I think the big thing with the bullpen is the inexperience.
Yeah. Now, they've got a spot coming up here this week. They're going to need another starter. You know, the team went out and got Wandy Rodriguez at the last second in the spring training, the beginning of the regular season. Anthony Bass is throwing the ball well. What are they thinking right now for an extra starter?
Well, Anthony Bass is the leading candidate. I mean, this is a guy who has great stuff, hasn't really had a lot of success in the big leagues. You know, they'd like for him to trust us. Stay cool and calm on the mound. Don't panic. Don't get rattled. I think that's been a concern in the past. If he can do that, he might have a chance. He pitched very well on opening day, pitched very well in Oakland in relief. I think they'll give him a shot and see where that takes him. You know, they got a couple guys down in the minors, Anthony Renato, who they got from the Red Sox, is a very good prospect, and they got their top prospects, Alex Gonzalez, and it's still like for him to get a little more experience down in AAA before they force him to the big leagues. You know, Wandy Rodriguez is a fallback option. I think right now they may give a shot with Anthony Bass.
Okay. Have they seen much of Wandy yet? Are they convinced that there's still a little left in that tank?
Well, he hasn't pitched yet for AAA. Obviously, they scouted him in spring training, and they liked what they saw. His first start with AAA is scheduled for Thursday. So, you know, they're not sure what he has left in the tank.
Yeah. Well, Tanner Shepherds, is he getting close?
Yeah, he should be back with the team possibly Wednesday, for sure on the road trip. He's had two or three good outings on rehab assignment. You know, he had the sprained ankle, which is obviously not an arm injury, so he's able to keep the arm going a little bit. He should be ready to go here, you know, in the next day or two or within a week.
Okay. All right. So there's some good news for the club. And I wanted to kind of wrap up this week talking about Jeff Banister and what kind of adjustments you've seen him making, you know, as he goes from spring training into the regular season. You know, it is just a slightly different environment. Have you noticed anything? How's he handling everything so far?
Well, so far he's handled it well. I mean, like you said, we're still a week into the season. They had a very good spring training. Things went very well. He's been very calm. you start to see what it's like to be a manager of the Rangers with all the injuries. I mean, I think that's hitting him faster than he realized, and I don't think he realized the magnitude of some of these things. He's got to work through that, but he's still trying to get to know his team, still trying to put together an offense, still trying to find roles for everybody. He's got a lot of work to do. So far, he's handling it well, but, again, it's early in the season.
Yeah, I guess the good news is Prince Fielder's been handling his end of the bargain for him. So there's another one of those silver linings. But, TR, thank you so much for the time, and look forward to doing it again next week.
Okay, guys, thank you.